The 200 Level has a new official website. Check out the 200levelpod.com for audio and video versions of the podcast, along with a written column. I'm finally putting that journalism degree to use. That's the 200 Level's official website online at the 200levelpod.com. It is the 200 Level, Mike Carpenter in the basement studio, and it's big news for Illini basketball. Admittedly, we've been off for a few weeks, and part of that is just to kind of let the dust settle and get a better idea of what the roster is going to look like instead of reacting to each and every addition that's made. But a lot of time has passed, a lot of news has happened, and today Illinois has added a European big man, Tomislav Ivicic. We'll learn the pronunciation exactly, but he is a 7'1" center from Croatia who is, we can't call him a stretch five because he's probably too big for that. He is a bit of a rim protector. He can also shoot the three, so he can stretch the floor a little bit, even though he's not your prototypical, as I said, stretch five. So it seems as if you added a versatile big at a position of need. You did not get one that is a proven college basketball player, but you did get one that is a somewhat proven European professional player. And to me, before we get into the specifics about this addition, to me, the most exciting thing about this addition and potentially another European acquisition in the next week or two is that Brad Underwood seems to have entered this offseason knowing exactly what he wants. And he's been very calculated and very deliberate in acquiring the kind of pieces that he wants. They are not done. I think we would all agree that they need a prime scorer at the two or the three. And the shooting guard position in particular, if you're looking at this from a traditional point guard, shooting guard, small forward, et cetera, kind of lens, that's where you need a proven commodity. And maybe you do get that sometime in the next few weeks. If you do, it's hard to look at this roster and find much in the way of holes. Now, these are guys that are not proven at the Big Ten level, but this is where Brad Underwood's history of getting good players from the transfer portal, and now apparently Europe, leads you to believe that, hey, this is actually trending in a good direction. It's going to be more difficult to prognosticate what the ceiling or the floor of this team is going to be until we see them. But it's difficult to imagine when you look at just each and every individual that's been acquired, and whether it was how highly regarded they were as a high school recruit, how they still produced at whatever D1 school they were at, or in this case, European Professional League. It's a lot of question marks, but at the same time, other than a Jake Davis, you aren't really acquiring projects. You are acquiring ready-made basketball players. How it all fits together, that's ultimately going to be an indication of Brad Underwood, the coach. But as far as the accruer of talent, it's looking pretty good so far. Yes, you don't have a Terrence Shannon Jr. or Coleman Hawkins coming back. At least, we don't think a Coleman Hawkins would come back either. So there are those lack of proven stars, for lack of a better term, and we can't guarantee that Ben Hamrickhouse, whichever you say it, all these names, we're going to learn them so well, though. So if I mispronounce a little bit, that's my bad. Though maybe he is the next Marcus Damask, even if he's like Marcus Damask light, that's still a really good place to be in. Now, when it comes to this big man and why it excites me, the fact that Brad Underwood says, you know what, screw this ridiculous amount of money being thrown around for D1 centers, which is what it sounds like. $2 million, apparently, for Cliff Omoruyi to go to Alabama. Really good player, no doubt. But he's basically a rim protector and a dunker. Good at that, but is he worth $2 million a year? Apparently, this market for fives is insane. And even though Illinois has a lot in the NIL pool to take some money from, they don't have unlimited money to spend. They don't have unlimited resources. So this seems to me like a calculated decision where they probably had to go spend money to lure a guy away from a professional league. One that already, at least his brother, whose first name starts with a Z, Z Ivicic, has that relationship with Orlando Antigua. You have to think that that helped with this as well. And you have to think that it was cheaper than $2 million for a Cliff Omoruyi or some of the other bigs that are out there. So I do like the pivot that Brad Underwood made. It's like he read the market and said, eh. And then Orlando Antigua said, I got a guy. And immediately it may pay dividends. I want to read from Jeremy Werner's article on 24/7 Sports. Official Illini land Croatian big man Tomislav Ivicic. Ivicic. Yeah, let's go with that. Ivicic. From Jeremy. Croatian big man Tomislav Ivicic has committed to Illinois and signed a national letter of intent and a Big Ten tender of financial aid. The 7-foot, 230-pound center played for SC Derby in Montenegro this past season. Ivicic, 20, is from Vodice, Croatia, and is the twin brother of former Kentucky big man Zvonimir Ivicic. Zvonimir, what a name. I love these names. Whom Illinois assistant Orlando Antigua coached last season in Lexington. A few bullet points from Jeremy's article. In 24 games for SC Derby this past season in the ABA League, Ivicic averaged 7.3 points, 3.9 rebounds, 0.9 blocks, and 1.3 assists. He shot 63.5% from two and made 13 of 32 threes, that's 40%, and 13 of 15 free throws, that's 87%. In 14 games for SC Derby in Montenegro Erste Liga, Ivicic averaged 11.9 points, 7.5 rebounds, 1.3 blocks, and 1.2 assists. He shot 59.6% from two, 13 of 28 from three, that's 46.4%, and 22 of 27 on free throws, that's 86%. This last bullet point I find particularly interesting. In a game against USC last summer with Derby, Ivicic had 23 points and 12 rebounds. So, from what I understand as I take a quick pause from Jeremy's article, this professional league that he's from is no slouch. And if you are having shades of Matisse Vassil, or even Nico Moretti, or Zachary Perrin, whichever, I understand. The European route, other than a Georgi Bashanishvili, hasn't worked out all that great for Illinois in the past. But this seems to be a bit more of a proven commodity. Now, Brad Underwood came out hot with a statement. This is from Jeremy's article. Brad Underwood says, quote, Tomislav is the modern-day five-man who fits right into our style of play as a big who can space the floor. He can play in pick-and-rolls, is an elite passer, and can step out in space and shoot threes. He is also a very good rim protector. Tomislav has played a lot of high-level basketball against older, established competition. That experience has made a tremendous impact on his development, and we are excited to add someone with the skill and versatility to our program. Here is a scouting report from Jeremy. Ivicic is a very skilled center with legitimate length and a solid base of strength. He's no stiff and is a fluid mover who can get up and down the court. The lefty shooter is a very skilled offensive player who can really space the floor and is becoming dangerously efficient with his improving three-point stroke. He can be a hub offensively as he's a strong passer, and he can score one-on-one in the post with a soft touch, especially over his right shoulder with a lefty hook. Ooh, a hook shot. I like that. While Ivicic is an incredibly explosive or an elite rim protector, he can also hold his own defensively in one-on-one situations in the post, and his length is impactful in defending at the rim. He's been playing pros and on the international stage, so he is battle-tested and has maturity to his game. Also from Jeremy. Ivicic won't come with the hype of other additions, but he is a significant piece of the offseason puzzle for the Illini. Ivicic isn't quite as mobile with the ball or as versatile as Coleman Hawkins, but he gives the Illini a very skilled big man who can stretch the floor to create spacing and is a post through whom the Illini can run some offense. Defensively, his length can make an impact, and he has enough strength to hold up in the post, and he has some maturity in his game after playing grown men the last few years. He also gives the Illini a really skilled, talented, and versatile front court with different pieces. Ivicic gives the Illini size and shot-making ability. Morez Johnson is an athletic, fierce rim runner. Kerry Booth is a long, athletic forward who can shoot from three. Trey White is a versatile offensive playmaker. And Ben Hamrickhaus and Jake Davis are high-level shot makers. The Illini should once again have a very formidable offense with a lot of size. What's next, according to Jeremy? The Illini have three scholarship spots available. Atop the list of needs is adding another playmaker and scorer on the wing, preferably a veteran with size and athleticism, who can put pressure on the rim and also stretch the floor. All right. They have a big board at 24/7 Sports, and that would be for premium members. Highly recommend that you give that a shot. Those guys have their fingers on the pulse. There was a rumor about Igor Demin, E-G-O-R-D-E-M-I-N, I believe is his name, who was a 18, 19-year-old wing that can really fill it up and is already projected on the 2025 draft boards. I think Coleman Hawkins said something to the effect with his Jeff Goodman interview that Underwood was in Spain, and that is where Igor Demin plays for, however you say his name, plays for Real Madrid, that has a basketball club as well as their soccer team, go figure. So, going Euro And again, has it worked out beautifully in the past? No. Have they gotten as much of a proven commodity as this? No. And to me, Ivicic, whose name I hopefully am not saying incorrectly every single time, is the kind of pickup that makes you feel like, wow, this roster is really rounding out. You know, Isaac Trotter, who also works for 24/7 Sports, had a tweet that was hit on a lot of the same points that Jeremy did about the front court situation for Illinois next year. None of these guys that they've added necessarily overlap with their skill set. You have very different players across the board. Ivicic is the rim protector and the guy that can pop out and shoot the three. Morez Johnson, I don't think much of a three-point shooter, at least not yet, but he is an athletic rim runner that can get rebounds. You have a Benham Rickhouse who defensively might leave you wanting, but is 6'9" and can fill it up. And then Kerry Booth, who showed a lot of potential at Notre Dame. Is there a Coleman Hawkins there in terms of proven D1 commodity? No, there's not. So it's not like I'm coming on here today and saying, Final Four. I do think, though, you are very much raising that floor. With the pieces you've acquired, it seems like you have a sneaky, experienced team. Most of these guys, and I don't know if this matters in the transfer portal age, most of these guys aren't necessarily one-year deals, at least not in terms of eligibility. Whether they choose to leave on their own volition, that's up to them. But most of these guys could stay more than 1 year. And if that's the case, then you take this group and add Jeremiah Fears, okay, who's shaping out to be like an all-American talent in high school. I guess my point is Brad Underwood just keeps bringing in talent. And the fact that he's finding new avenues to do that, where the transfer portal, as we know, is a mess. But what has he done since the beginning of this offseason? Whether it be a Kylan Boswell or a Jake Davis or a Trey White or a Kerry Booth. Other than, let's say, Maddox, who ended up committing to Xavier. To my knowledge, there's no one that they brought in for a visit that has ended up spurning them to go somewhere else. I don't know if AJ Storr ever even came in here. And he's at Kansas for a heck of a lot of money. Good for him, right? But overall, this seems to have been an offseason where they went in with a plan and they are executing that plan. And whether or not they've had to adapt along the fly, maybe so. Was this a name that was out there before Orlando Antigua came in? I don't know. Somehow I doubt it, because how would that connection have been made beforehand? But in order to maximize this amazing assistant that you got, a few weeks later, you go to Croatia or whatever club he's playing for, Montenegro, which is Serbia, right? And you bring in a guy whose brother is already a proven talent at the D1 level. And while Tomislav Ivicic doesn't seem to have the draft buzz as Zvonimir Ivicic's brother, he does seem to have the measurables and, if you watch the tape, the talent in order to be a pretty good player off the jump. So it's exciting. And it will be weird, sure, going into State Farm Center in late October, early November, and seeing this completely new team, minus Ty Rogers and Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn, seeing this completely new team. But it's also exciting. And this is where you're going to have to lean a little bit on Brad Underwood as the coach to see if he can somehow get this group of what will probably end up being 10 brand new pieces to coalesce. It's exciting times. So we're back with the 200 level here. And I got to thank our sponsors before we get into some other stuff we want to talk about today. Might be a bit of a shorter episode, and we will be back here whenever they get a shooting guard / wing, and we'll kind of be keeping our finger on the pulse for the rest of this. But along the way, from football through basketball season, we've been supported by our friends at DP Dough, online at dpdough.com for all the best deals and prices. dpdough.com. They deliver anywhere in Champaign Urbana, so go online and order your calzone, custom, or one of their favorites at dpdough.com. Also, Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, your home's best friend. Give them a call at 217-841-4728. Dogtown can get your AC checked up, can get it tuned up in time for the warm weather ahead. We've already had some 80-degree days. I'm sure your home has felt hot in those days. Ours didn't, though, because our AC's purring like a kitten, thanks to the folks at Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, 217-841-4728. Also, Owen Builders LLC. I'm on owenbuildersllc.com for home additions, patios, decks. Check out a gallery of their excellent work online at owenbuildersllc.com. And finally, State Farm agent Brian Hansen online at brianismyguy.com. Life, auto, home, business renters, you name it, Brian is my guy, and he could be your guy as well at brianismyguy.com. Champagne Showers Podcast Network. Appreciate them. Also, we have a website, as you hear at the beginning of each podcast, the200levelpod.com. And that includes a written component, which I'll get to later, about football. But I don't want to talk about football right now. Just, you know, there are far more exciting things to talk about than Illini football. And I'm already kind of dreading the fact that come August, how the hell am I going to talk about that without being a complete, let's be honest, jerk about Illinois football. All right, I got scratch notes. It's all wrinkled in my pocket here, but I do have notes. I came prepared for this episode of the 200 level. And with the addition of Ivicic, I wanted to kind of get a breakdown of what the roster looks like so far. There are some questions, of course, at the two and the three, which we will get to. But I kind of got a two deep in what I project to be your starting lineup. So Kylan Boswell is your starting point guard. And I don't want to gloss over the fact that Kylan Boswell, a very talented individual, might make a jump for Illinois. He might not. Okay, I understand that. But I actually think it's a better than 50% chance that he does take a jump from his sophomore to junior year, that there were some circumstances at Arizona that led to a kind of cool finish for him, as I think Jalen Bradley, the other point guard, was sort of stepping into his own. Kylan Boswell is a very good player. There was a reason he was a five-star recruit. I think by giving him the keys, getting him back home, I expect him to have a very good season and very quickly become a fan favorite. There's the local connection, but there's also the way in which he plays. He's a smart kid, big-bodied kid, tough kid, and if I were to get a jersey for next year, which I'm not going to because there's no need to get jerseys in the NIL era. Sorry, guys. You might be gone the next year. That would be it. And I think Kylan Boswell will pretty quickly endear himself to fans at the point guard position. Your first true point guard in a while, because Trent Frazier did the very best that he could given the circumstances. Io, not quite a true point guard. Andres Feliz, kind of a gritty guy that could play point, but was a bit more of a combo. You know, Brad Underwood, to his credit, his backcourts have been fairly malleable, and more than one guy have been able to run point. I guess Andre Curbelo would have been the guy. Duh. How do I forget about Andre? I don't think, fingers crossed, knock on wood, that Kylan Boswell is quite as kooky as Andre Curbelo. And that would leave Dre Gibbs Lawhorn as the backup point guard. You could do far worse than that. I think you could see Dre Gibbs Lawhorn playing 12 to 15 minutes a game next year. He is part of the long-term plan here. The fact he stuck it out and Nico Moretti left, I think, tells you a lot. Shooting guard, I have question marks as to who might start for you there. It's not going to be Rogers at the two spot, technically. And it's not going to be Jake White. I guess Trey White could maybe be the guy there. I don't know. And by the way, hold on. I want to make sure I'm getting this right here. Because here I say Jake White. I know we have a Trey White from Louisville. But with all these additions, sometimes it's hard to actually keep track of everybody that we're talking about here. So what is this? Okay, got it. Jake Davis. Good Lord. Sorry, everybody. Jake Davis is the kid from Mercer. So at the shooting guard spot, I'm leaving that question marks, and I do think your starting shooting guard is yet to be acquired. If they get a really strong shooting guard transfer, I feel very good about next year. At the three, either Trey White or Ty Rogers to start for you, I would imagine. Benham Rickhouse is probably going to be your starting four. If you want more size and offensive pop to start, and Booth as the other four. Not bad for a two deep at the four spot. And then at the five, you got Merez Johnson and Tomislav Ivicic. Two very different players, and if I were to have to guess which one will start, I don't know why my druthers still tell me Merez Johnson will start. But as the five-star or borderline five-star kid that is coming into your program, it's not like you owe him any favors, but I think he is, in fact, just really good. If Ivicic starts instead, I think that speaks less to Merez Johnson being some sort of project and more towards Ivicic being like ready-made and truly everything that Brad Underwood said here in these quotes today. Maybe he is. But as I look at the two deep across here, once you get a certified shooting guard or wing, whichever, a guy that can take it to the rim, a guy that can shoot from three, I feel like that's a very balanced roster. I don't know about superstars. I don't know if this team has a superstar right now. They got a few guys I think could hit for you big time. And that would be Benham Rickhouse in his 1 year with you. I think Ivicic already. I know that Ant Wright one of the college basketball guys on Twitter, threw Avisic's name in for Big Ten Freshman of the Year just based on, and I understand why. He is older. He is more experienced. If that skill set translates to D1 basketball, he's going to be pretty good right off the bat. I don't know what the superstars or stars are on this team. I do think you have a collection of pretty darn good players. And to me, that balance means that you're a tournament team. Okay, we can say that, and I think that Brad Underwood's kind of gotten your program to that level without too much of a question. The question then will be, as we watch the team kind of develop in November and December, are we able to raise that bar any higher? This will not be a team that's in the preseason top 25. I don't think no matter what they do the rest of the offseason, they will not be preseason top 25. Because some of these are either reaches, like a Benham Rickhouse is not a guy that I think would have significantly changed how people would view, let's say, Indiana after the transfer portal closes. But given what this offense is and what he can do, I think it's okay for Illini fans to look at this addition and say, yeah, you can just slot him in at the four. He's going to be pretty productive for you. I think he is. I don't have too many questions about that. Go to Trey White, for example, who had a pretty good freshman year for USC, not the most efficient year for a really bad Louisville team, but this is a guy that was highly regarded as a high school recruit, and even with his not-so-efficient offense, is still putting up points at a decent clip. If he's your starting three, you could do far worse than that. There are plenty of tournament teams that would take a Trey White as your starting three. I guess all this is to say, I'm looking at a bunch of names that aren't necessarily the AJ Store $2 million a year guy. But I am looking at a collection of guys that have a unique mix of skill and experience. Even these sophomores or juniors that are only in their third year, all of these guys have played a lot, with the exception of Morris Johnson and Dre Gibbs Lawhorn. Everybody else has a lot of minutes. And while it will not be as old of a team age-wise next year, I don't think that they're going to be in any sort of circumstance labeled inexperienced, because they just simply aren't. That, I think, is the sneaky cool thing that Underwood's done this offseason. To where I'm even more excited than I was last offseason, where I thought that Quincy Guerrier and Marcus Damask and Justin Harmon were good additions, and you knew that you had two studs coming back, though that wasn't until the end of May, if I recall. But with this group right here, you know, I feel pretty confident that there will be some combination within these 8, 9, 10 guys that will work. That is what happens when you start winning as a program and you start entrusting the coach. A very different position than I was in last year. And perhaps I'm overreacting based on the fact that this year's team made an Elite Eight and won the Big Ten tournament title and had, by any measure, one of the better basketball seasons I've seen as an Illini fan. But winning cures all. And when you're entering year 8 of Brad Underwood and you're seeing the kind of cool precision with which he's amassing this roster, how can you not be confident? If Vucic were an addition in Brad Underwood's third year, I don't know if we were looking at it quite the same. But because he has such a track record now of bringing in guys through the transfer portal that have actually not just contributed, but become your studs, it's starting to become a pattern now. And that just breeds confidence in what they're doing. So I'm not going to make any predictions as far as how many wins this team is or is not going to have. We don't know that. We don't even know the schedule. We do know the homes and aways, and I wish I could get to that real quick, because I think that that actually makes an argument for next year's team being in pretty good position to win a lot of games, which, is it foolish for me to play a little dare to dream? Maybe so, but what the hell? Even on May 6th, let's do that. The home and away opponents, here we go. Let's have some fun. I want to start with the double plays, and of which you only have three: Michigan State, Northwestern, and Wisconsin. Happy that it's Michigan State, because my wife being a Michigan State fan, we've had fun going those games. If it works out, we'll go to East Lansing again. Northwestern, they got to take a step back without Boo Booey, right? Just beat them twice, okay? Can we just... They had their tournament team last year. They will go a couple years without making the tournament, I would imagine. And then Wisconsin, who I think might stink. Like, really bad. Those are your double plays. I feel good about that. Your home onlys, which means you will not go on the road to face these following teams: Iowa, Maryland, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, UCLA, USC. Could you have gotten better breaks than what you have here? At Iowa, any year is tough. I like them as a rival, but hey, if we can only get them at home, beautiful. Maryland, house of horrors. You got the win this year. I don't want to go back. And in fact, Maryland will be pretty talented this year. Whether that means they're any good, I don't know. Ohio State. We'll see. That is one that I never really like going to Columbus, despite the fact you won last year. Penn State, though. I never like going to Penn State. It doesn't tend to end well. They've beaten you God knows how many times in a row, whether it's home or away, but you only get them at home, so I think that's a nice break. Purdue should be a winnable game at home. Even if Purdue takes a significant step back, I don't like playing at Mackey. You avoid Mackey. That's pretty good. UCLA, I mean, Mick Cronin had a bad year, but he's getting a pretty talented group together. And then USC, you avoid a California trip altogether. And USC, with 9 transfers already, you see that Musselman is just hitting the ground running out there. So they'll be talented if they bring it all together. I don't know. Away only. So these are the single plays. They will not come to State Farm Center. Away only includes Indiana, so you only play Luke Goody once. Haven't even talked about Luke Goody. Do I wish him well? Yeah, kind of. He's at Indiana, so I'm not going to be rooting for him. But this is what it is. I cannot sit here and cry about an Illini player going to Indiana. Luke gave us a lot, I thought, down the stretch. He was part of the reason you made an Elite Eight. And for that, thank you, Luke. Best of luck to you, just not Indiana. Michigan. Yeah, I wish we could get him at home. They're a pretty talented bunch there, and I think Dusty Mays had about as good of a first month as a Michigan fan could hope for. Minnesota on the road. Decimated. I feel awful for Ben Johnson. This is the kind of program that's going to struggle in the NIL era, just like Illini football, I think, will struggle in the NIL era. But Minnesota on the road, doesn't matter if you play them road or home or away, they're going to really lack talent. Nebraska, tough. They'll rank Mast out for the year. Tominaga, gone. We'll see how Nebraska does this year. Oregon on the road, yeah, it's tough. That's tough. Rutgers on the road, tough. Washington on the road, we'll see. I don't really know what Washington's prospects are. But overall, what a break. No Mackey, no game at Maryland, which is never fun. Your home and aways, your double plays are totally doable. Michigan State, Northwestern, Wisconsin. It just sets up for, there's a lot of wins. Now, this does mean for your home games, your home schedule in total, when I include the double and single plays, are Iowa, Maryland, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, UCLA, USC, Michigan State, Northwestern, Wisconsin. That's pretty cool. Of the away teams, that it'd be nice to play them at home, Indiana and Michigan, sure, would like to get them at home just because of the history, and those are bigger ticket kind of games, but what, Minnesota, Nebraska, Oregon, Rutgers, Washington? Are you heartbroken that you won't be seeing the State Farm Center this year? Nah, not necessarily. I think this worked out okay. I think it did. And then you mix in a roster that's not done yet. I'm excited to see what they do at the shooting guard position. If they figure that out, then this is a really balanced team. I'm not going to make any Elite Eight or bust, because that's just not how it works. But I do think that it would be tantalizing to imagine what the peak of that group of players would be. And it might be foolish of me to do this in the NIL era, but look at this group and think, okay, if you were to retain most of them, let's say you have a good year, people find their roles, they're feeling good about where they're at, even with the attrition of 2 or 3 guys, but you keep the rest and add a Jeremiah Fears and then another 1 or 2 through the transfer portal, it just feels like you're doing that rare kind of thing where you could have your cake and eat it too. Bring in immediate help, but not lose them immediately after 1 year. That is a really difficult balancing act in this day and age of college basketball. We'll see if Brad Underwood can do that. A couple more things I wanted to talk about today before we get out of here. There is news, if we want to call it that, on the Terrence Shannon Jr. case. And the reason I bring this up, and I know that I didn't talk about it too much after he came back on the court because people that were more you know, cynical about it. Opposing fans could look at that and say, well, what, are you turning a blind eye to it? And I would understand why the cynic would potentially look at it as such. But part of it was, you know, at the end of the day, we are a sports podcast, and we will react to the newsy things, but really from when he came back through the end of the basketball season, there wasn't a whole lot in the way of news about his case. There was a bit of news that came out back on May 2nd, so this is 4 days ago. His team filed a motion for a Daubert hearing and to exclude expert testimony. Now, I'm going to read this legalese as quickly and as efficiently as I can. Terrence Shannon, by and through his attorneys, Trisha Bath and Thomas J. Bath Jr., moves the court for an order excluding the testimony and reports of Jennifer Hewitt, who is apparently an expert witness, as the proposed testimony is impermissible per Daubert versus Merrill Dow Pharmaceuticals and Kansas case law. Mr. Shannon requests a hearing on this issue prior to the trial. Now, what I want to try to do here is zoom in on some of the details from this release. This is an electronic filing May 1st from the Douglas County District Court in Lawrence, Kansas. Anticipated findings of facts according to Terrence Shannon's legal team. Number one, the day after the alleged incident, a SANE examination was done. That is a sexual assault examination kit. This examination included the collection of swabs from numerous locations on the complaining witness, hereinafter MN, that's how they're labeled in this, body and clothing. Okay. Number two, police later collected a mouth swab from Terrence for DNA comparison. So far we have DNA swabs collected from a SANE examination of the potential victim and a mouth swab from Terrence. Three, per a KBI report, examination of, sorry kids, the vaginal and external genital swabs revealed no male DNA. Number four, as to swabs from the potential victim's underwear, the, let's see here, due to an, well, where did this go? Gosh darn it. Well, let's see here. It looks like that's cut off. Long story short, the argument from Terrence Shannon's legal team is that there is no DNA evidence linking Terrence to this crime. And there are people that have poured through this and they find, oh, look, this says that, for example, Section 1.4 in this filing says not enough overlapping data exists between the two samples to make any statements about a possible common contributor. However, based upon data at the something-something locus, this is scientific jargon, it is possible the DNA detected on these two samples from the victim combined is from a total of five male contributors. Now, that, of course, caused quite the firestorm amongst Illini Twitter and Illini message boards, and I want to be cautious about this because I don't know if that necessarily reads as, oh, the potential victim certifiably had five other males' DNA on her person. I don't know if that's what that necessarily means or if it's just a possibility. Regardless, what I don't want this to turn into, because we're still lacking information and this is just a filing from Terrence Shannon's legal team, I don't want to get into anything resembling, for lack of a better term, slut shaming. We don't know yet. But I will say from a legal perspective, wouldn't you think that this is pretty damning stuff for the prosecution? If there's no DNA evidence of Terrence Shannon Jr., and I will admit wholeheartedly, looking at the police filings from way back in December and January, that there are enough inconsistencies, it being in a public place, a lack of witness testimony, it just seemed flimsy, and that DNA was going to be the thing that would maybe do him in if he in fact had done this. At the moment, it doesn't look like there is any DNA evidence linking him to it. If it is true that he did not do any of this, and the lack of DNA evidence is because he had no sexual assault, no rape, any of that, then I wish nothing more for Terrence than to get drafted, have a successful career, and be welcomed back to the State Farm Center like any other player. If you were to ask me for whatever little a hunch is worth, my hunch tells me that he will be exonerated as much as one can be in this legal process, and it won't be through some sort of settlement that leaves anything fuzzy. Whether this gets dismissed, I don't know. I don't even think that he would be, at this point with the DNA evidence or lack thereof, I don't even think his team would plead down. I don't know if that was ever part of the plan. If he didn't do this, I want him to be as remembered as any other Illini basketball player, and I don't want this to hang over him to a point where it would affect his legacy at the university with fans. I don't anticipate that it will if this holds. And then the question is, do we look back on this with some anger at the accuser? And I mentioned before back in December and January that when you look at cases like this, and when you look at just sexual encounters amongst young adults, there is always a fuzziness and a yuckiness because they're just young people that don't really know what the hell is going on. And that's not to excuse truly abhorrent behavior, which does happen on college campuses. But I do think the majority of these encounters between young people are just awkward and weird. And they're just ill-equipped to really handle so many of the sort of social cues and other things that would make this far less messy. I would imagine that Terrence met this girl, or at the very least, he was in the same place as her. Otherwise, how do we get to this point where this is ever brought up and brought to a charge? A rape charge, no less? But if you are someone that looks at this and gets a little pissed off at the idea that he was potentially falsely accused, I think it's okay to be a little pissed off if that is the case. What do you do with that anger? I don't know. Are they going to charge the accuser? I don't think so. And you could argue that something like this, if it is a false accusation, well, there should be something that happens to the accuser. I wouldn't disagree with that. If this were truly a false accusation, I just get the feeling, and call this rank speculation and maybe irresponsible on my part. I'd like to think, at least, that there's not some nefarious plot by some college girl that I'm going to get this guy in trouble and get his money. I know the cynical part of human nature could lead some people down that path. Instead, I think this was a weird encounter where there may or may not have been actual any touching. I mean, right now they say no DNA, according to his lawyers. And if that's the case, then yes, I do feel for Terrence having gone through what he went through. Are there worse things to go through in life? Yes. Does that mean that Terrence is clean as a whistle, no issues, never done anything wrong in his life? No. But does that mean he's a rapist? That's a huge word. It's a nuclear word. And one that once it gets labeled on somebody, it's very difficult to ever get away from that. So if this holds, and if the lack of evidence, which it does seem to be a dearth of evidence by any measure, seems to hold, then this will get dismissed. It won't even probably see court. And then he'll get drafted, and he'll be welcomed back to State Farm Center. At least he should be, if that's how it all unfolds. Notice I keep saying if, because this is one of those really tenuous positions where I don't want to go too far on one side and certifiably say he didn't do anything wrong, because I don't know that. But that is a big, big filing from his people to say that there's no DNA evidence, and apparently they have the evidence to prove that there is no evidence, which is a huge thing in a sexual assault case. So, yeah, my heart of hearts as an Illini fan, I want him to be innocent, you know? I watched the rest of the season rooting for Terrence Shannon Jr., the basketball player. And what we didn't comment on here was the personal issues, because after, at least initially, because it felt like something that each person would have to kind of contend with on their own, how they were going to handle watching him, rooting for him, just like they would any other Illini basketball player, except he had this big old matzo ball hanging over his head. What a weird saga, though. And it looks like it'll be resolved sooner rather than later. And probably, I would imagine, given the aggressiveness of his legal team before the NBA draft. All right, last thing before we get out of here. I ended the last podcast with football. I had a bit of a mini rant I got a bit of a mini rant here, and call this a plug for the written component of the 200 level. But we got a column on April 30th. I wrote my first column about football. I'm going to read this and then just give you the quick, why do I feel this way? We need to talk about football. Available at the200level.substack.com. Here's the subheadline. Entering his fourth season, Brett Bielema's program is in a precarious spot. Now, writer's note, okay? The bulk of the story I wrote before Andrew Dennis, the highest rated recruit in Illinois' 2024 class, entered the transfer portal after just 4 months on campus. He ended up signing with Michigan State from his home state. Oh, what a difference a year makes. In April 2023, my wife and I went to the Coaches versus Cancer event at Gordyville. Her being a Michigan State alum, it was mostly to see and luckily meet Tom Izzo. We got a picture with her of her with the legendary coach, after which she asked if I wanted one with Brad Underwood. Nah, I said with a shrug. And bear in mind, this is just weeks after a lifeless end to a disappointing basketball season. What about Bielema? She asked, pointing to the football coach fielding recruiting calls 100 feet away. Hell yes, I exclaimed, embodying my fanboy moniker. Now, not so much. Call me a Fairweather fan if you want, but the full-throated confidence I had in Brett Bielema has eroded as we enter a massive fourth season. The same guy who I'd fully bought into after an impressive 8-1 campaign in 2022 finds his program in a precarious spot. Let's get an important, objective truth out of the way. Brett Bielema's first 3 years as Illinois football coach are the most impressive since I've been following the program. Sure, that's a skinniest kid at fat camp argument, as his competition includes Lou Tepper, Ron Turner, Ron Zook, Tim Beckman, and Lovie Smith. Still, it's the truth. As head coach, Bielema has fielded competitive football teams. We can count the blowouts on one measly six-fingered hand. At Virginia and versus Wisconsin in 2021. At Kansas versus Penn State, at Purdue, and versus Nebraska in 2023. I'm counting the Nebraska game because it was an embarrassing effort by any measure. Considering six-plus blowouts a year became the norm under Beckman and Lovie, this is a substantial improvement. What concerns me most, however, is the close losses. Not because of the smaller margins, that's good, but because of the lost momentum. Consider the three-game losing streak in 2022. 1. Beat Michigan State in front of a near sold-out crowd? I imagine you beat Purdue the next week. 2. Even with that loss to Mel freaking Tucker, fine, it's football. Weird things happen. Just beat Purdue and we'll likely see you in Indianapolis for the Big Ten title game. 3. Nah, blew that one. Oh well, if you pull off a whole huge road upset at number 2 Michigan, it'll make up for it regardless of a trip to Indy or not. 3 opportunities, 3 losses. Throwing a bowl loss to Mississippi State and a potentially great 2022 season became merely very good. And that's fine. As long as you build on the 8 wins and merely make a bowl in 2023, you'll prove to Illini fans, college football observers, and recruits alike that you have this thing on solid footing. 5-7. Hey, I'm calloused by Illini football disappointments. I've been through devastating 5-7 seasons in 2000, 2002, and 2008. I have never seen sustained momentum from any coach. So why is it that last year and the months since have soured me on Brett Bielema? Because I've already seen this story, and frankly, I'm tired of it. Brett Bielema has had 5 months to address the issues that kept Illinois from making consecutive bowl trips, namely a defense that single-handedly lost you games against Wisconsin and Northwestern. One major addition to the defensive staff, DB coach David Gibbs, left the program, reportedly for medical reasons, after less than 2 months on the job. Another, R.G. McDaniel, linebackers, does have a solid track record. But it doesn't change the fact that Aaron Henry is your coordinator. And after both the coordinator and head coach spoke about the values of, quote, learning on the job, I can't help but wonder what the hell we're doing here. Okay, fine. The defensive staff may not be the best in the country, as McDaniel tweeted on April 20th. Ugh. But if they had some talent, nah. Johnny Newton, a game-wrecking All-American DT, is gone. Keith Randolph, too. Perhaps the emergence of Gabe Backus can aid the defensive line, opening things up for Seth Coleman, outside linebacker, but no major contributors were added to the front seven. The front seven wasn't the problem, though. It was the secondary. Outside of Xavier Scott and Matthew Bailey, what the hell do you even have back there? Couple that with the lack of trust in Aaron Henry in a post-Witherspoon, Brown, and Martin era, and I shudder to think what Jalen Daniels will do to us on September 7th. 5 months, and the defense, presumably, still stinks. Maybe we just outscore people. Barry Lunney turned a major corner in the second half of 2023, and despite losing Isaiah Williams and Casey Washington at wide receiver, the offense will score points, maybe even a lot of them. But in a 27-24 game in the fourth quarter, and Aaron Henry's not so vaunted, Johnny Newton-less defense taking the field to get one last stop, how are you feeling? Not good, nor should you. I could get even more micro about the upcoming football season, provide a laundry list of issues. The fact of the matter is things don't feel good. Case in point, Andrew Dennis entering the transfer portal. There was no forward momentum to speak of. On the contrary, it feels like things may be headed in the wrong direction. So how do we get here in less than 18 months after a New Year's Day bowl appearance? I return to this quote from a fellow Big Ten coach before the 2023 season. Quote, "I think Illinois is interesting. Bielema is really feeling himself right now. So I don't know if that's good or bad for them." End quote. As any Arkansas Razorback fan will tell you, it's a bad thing. The same character traits that turned Bielema into a pariah in Fayetteville seem to be emerging in Champaign. A stubbornness that doomed his tenure in the SEC seems to be rearing its head in a revamped Big Ten. Not all of this is Bielema's fault. In fact, some of it is rotten timing. The NIL era has been a boon for the men's basketball team. Donors understandably will funnel tons of cash into Brad Underwood's program because, one, they've been successful, and two, we just care more about basketball. Hell, if I were a millionaire approached by an Illinois NIL collective like Icon, I'd say, sure, take my money, but not for football. But unlike the men's program across Kirby Avenue, Bielema's inability to capitalize on an 8-win season hindered any chance of upping the NIL pot. It's reasonable to believe Illinois football is one of the have-nots of the Big Ten when it comes to luring top portal transfer portal talent. We can't afford another bad year and expect this coach to turn it back around. Not in this NIL climate, not in this conference, not at this football program. For Brett Bielema, the time is now, or the time may be up. I didn't like writing that. I hate it. I don't think it's overly reactionary. Sadly, it's stagnated, and I worry that with the 18-team Big Ten and the lack of money for the football program compared to other Big Ten football programs, how do you build this? How do you be a developmental program in the NIL era? I'm not looking forward to this football season, as you can tell, but we can take a break from that. I said my piece, Chrissy. I said it right there in the article, and we'll only talk about it when we need to. But we'll be back when there is more Illini basketball news. Thanks for your patience in the last couple weeks. Again, wanted the dust to settle, have a better idea of the roster. But yeah, we're amassing a pretty cool and intriguing, tantalizing roster, and they aren't done yet. I'm really liking how Underwood has attacked this offseason. All right, before we get out of here, got to thank DP Doe. I'm on at dpdoe.com. Owen Builders LLC, online at owenbuildersllc.com. State Farm agent Brian Hansen, online at brianismyguy.com. And finally, Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, your home's best friend. Get your AC check today by calling them at 217-841-4728. For Champagne Showers Podcast Network, appreciate them. Appreciate you. And remember our website, the200levelpod.com, for audio, video, and our written columns. We'll see you soon, everybody. It is the 200 level.